Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Pull Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com.
All right. My name's Josh Everly. I'll be your host tonight, as always, Monday night. Let's talk a little bit about what we got planned tonight. Tonight we got a special one-hour edition of the Pull-Up Podcast. No Snotty Drippin'. I think Snotty's going to be starting his own show on Thursday nights, so keep an eye out for that. Bringing in his own guests, pestering his own people, will no longer be pestering me on Mondays. At least that's the plan. You never know with Snotty. He might make a surprise appearance here or there. I am supposed to be joined by HoopsCritic.com's owner and NBA XM regular, Brian Geltzeiler. I am waiting for him to call in. I will be joined at 9:30 by Andy Bailey from Bleacher Report, the feature writer for the Utah Jazz, and we're going to talk some draft tonight. So, yeah, we got a good show planned. A couple developments today. There were some rumors about the Lakers potentially acquiring Boogie Cousins from the Kings. A lot of talk going on right now. Not really sure what to think of it. I think this is going to be a busy draft. We are looking at a lot of potential teams looking to move up. We're looking at a lot of talent in this draft. We're looking at a lot of unknowns. Eric Bledsoe, there are whispers that the Knicks has been dangled towards the Knicks. Yeah, so hopefully Brian hops on here right away and we can get rolling. I think we're having some technical difficulties. Hold on one second. Please bear with us. So as I said, yeah, we're going to be joined by Brian Geltzeiler at Hoops Critic. I think this is him right now. Brian, you with us?
I'm with you, Josh. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Glad to have you. I was starting to struggle with my itinerary. I'm not usually the talent of this show.
Oh, you can handle it just fine. Huh? I don't worry about you at all, my friend. How you been? All right?
I wasn't on the air yesterday. We didn't have a podcast. So let's say happy. I just want to say Happy Father's Day to everyone. I know you're a father. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for making the time. How was your day yesterday?
I had a great day. Couldn't have had better, actually. I got no complaints. They took all those kids took care of me pretty good.
You got four kids, right?
That's correct.
It's quite the ordeal, and that's a whole party.
Yeah, there's plenty. There's plenty going on in my house.
Let's get to business. Okay. We were talking just before you got on the show. A lot of rumors coming up with the draft. We'll get to that. NBA Finals, we just watched it. Just happened. What do you take away? Just your quick thoughts on the final that we just watched.
Well, I think there's a little bit of a revolution going on in the league, a small ball revolution. And I think that revolution is going to turn into an evolution. Right now, there's nothing hotter than the three-point shot and taking a lot of three-point attempts. The teams that took the most three-point attempts went the furthest in the playoffs this year. But we have a league that is constantly evolving. And I think you will start to see a lot more of what you saw Cleveland do in the finals in defending the arc very aggressively, forcing teams to adjust, because not everybody has a Steph Curry that can hit contested shots in the way that he can hit contested shots. So I think from that standpoint, you saw something in the finals where Golden State won a title essentially playing small ball. I think that's going to end up, as we look at things historically, being somewhat of an aberration. I think, and not to say that the three is ever going to be de-emphasized, but I think that the aggressive defending of the three is going to normalize the game a little bit, re-emphasize the low post, re-emphasize other sources of easy basket, maybe never totally re-emphasizing the mid-range shot. But I think we've gotten to a point where there are teams out there that find the pull-up three more attractive than the easy two in transition. And I think at one point or another, we're going to see that evolution come back to us in the way that we know it to be. And this final, I think, is maybe an inflection point for all that.
So if you're saying that this is the tipping point, we're having a revolution with the three-point shot, who would you who would this start with? Is this Morey Ball, or is this before him? Are we talking the 7 Second Suns? Who are we talking here?
This is Mike D'Antoni. This is the way Mike D'Antoni liked the game played, a constant pick and roll, spacing the floor well, having guys that can shoot it and getting out in transition and not being afraid to fire open three-point shots in transition. This is absolute. The way the game is being played right now is the Mike D'Antoni revolution. And I spoke to Mike D'Antoni about it a couple of months ago, and he said something very interesting to me that impacted me, because Mike D'Antoni was a guy. Well, I mean, Josh, what was Mike D'Antoni's big knock as a coach? People didn't want to knock Mike D'Antoni. What did they say?
It was always defense. Always defense, defense, defense.
No defense, okay? Mike D'Antoni said something quite matter-of-fact to me, and it ended up being prophetic when I spoke to him in February. Mike D'Antoni said that the big misnomer about his system is that you can't play his system and be a top-level defensive team. And he said, right now, the Golden State Warriors are playing my system, and they are the number one defensive team in the NBA. Well, they remain the number one defensive team in the NBA for the entire balance of the season. Okay, and he's right. You can be a good defensive team and play that up-tempo system, and that's a big change in the NBA. It was never like that. It was always the thought that when you open the floor that way, it was going to affect your defense in a negative way. The Warriors have flipped that switch. They've turned that page on that. Can be a top-level defensive team and be an up-tempo team as well. So, yeah, Mike D'Antoni, it's his system. But I'll tell you something, as much as they played his system, there was the defensive discipline that was instilled in this team came initially from Mark Jackson.
So this Warriors team was very special, and their run got cut a little bit due to other teams' failings, which isn't entirely fair.
Josh,
so I'm going to ask – sorry?
Hello.
Do I still got you, Brian?
You got me. Yes, we're back now.
Okay. So, fair or foul, this Warriors team got luckier than your average title team on their run to a championship.
I think that's true. I think that it's funny. Somebody asked me a question last week and didn't love my answer about, is this Warriors team an all-time great team? And my answer was no, it's not. And you can only beat who's put in front of you. But it's very hard in this era, in this season, let's say, for us to declare an all-time great team that didn't have to go through the defending champion San Antonio Spurs. And I will tell you, the 2013-14 Spurs were much more of an all-time team than this Warriors team was. And I think when you look at the prevalent theme throughout the league this year, which was injuries up and down the line, everybody had to deal with major injuries, even right up to the finals, what the Cavaliers were dealing with. The Warriors skated through a season without any injuries. So, and as much as you want to talk about depth and conditioning and athleticism and all that, a lot of that's luck too.
I agree with a lot of that. I think what I said on the show last week was that this is a great Warriors team that could have been an all-time great team, but we just didn't get to see it based on how the playoffs shook out with seeding
yep.
and injuries. Got one more question on the finals before we move on to the draft. When we look back at the 2015 NBA Finals, 10 years from now, what will you remember?
LeBron. It's very hard to look at this series with how it shook out and not be able to look at this superhuman performance James had. What he was able to do with and win two games with that cast of characters around him was amazing. Was absolutely amazing. And I think as much as this was a Warriors title and Curry was great and you know Andre Iguodala played above his head and gave them everything they needed, as much as you had all that, the story of the finals was LeBron James and what he was able to do with really no help at all. No help at all. So it starts and ends there, because for the Cavaliers, I mean, geez, would you have figured if the Cavaliers were going to lose Irving in the game one of this series and lose the game they lost Irving? Everybody was ready to end this series the second Irving went down, and LeBron James single-handedly made this a heck of a series against one of the top 10 regular season teams of all time, and that's what you can't forget about this Warriors team. And that it's just an amazing job by James.
Was a phenomenal performance. The Cavaliers really had no business going to six without Kyrie. It's too bad we didn't get a game seven, but it was an epic finals that really a lot of us thought wouldn't be. Now it's over. We're headed to the draft. There's a lot of talk. Teams are playing games. Guys are rising up and falling down boards. Regardless of how it shakes out on Thursday, who are your top five players? Who are the best five prospects in this draft in your eyes?
I will say in this order, Karl Anthony Towns, Jahlil Okafor, D'Angelo Russell, actually strike that, Emmanuel Mudiay, D'Angelo Russell, and Kristaps Porzingis. I think those are the top five players in this draft. I like Mudiay above Russell, by the way.
Surprised to hear you say that. There are a lot of people who are pretty down on Mudiay for some of the reasons you were talking about with the Warriors earlier. He isn't known to be a great shooter. Why exactly are you so high on him?
Because I look at Mudiay as being the next coming of John Wall. I think that's the skill set that he has. I think he's a guy that can push the tempo in transition. I think he has very good size for a point guard. He's a good rebounder for a point guard. He's lightning fast. He's got an NBA body right now. And the one thing place he needs work is the shooting, but that's something that you can work on. Look how far Wall has come. Look at the floor general that John Wall is on this level right now. Emmanuel Mudiay could be every bit that good. And I think the other thing with Mudiay is he's going to step on an NBA floor and be able to guard people at the very beginning. He's going to be a really good defensive player in the NBA. And I like D'Angelo Russell. Don't get me wrong. I don't think that D'Angelo Russell's ever going to be a good defensive player. I think that's an issue with him. And so when I look at these two guys, I think Mudiay is a special talent with the right work, and that certainly could be terrific. You know, I heard Larry Brown talk about Mudiay, who he was supposed to have at SMU, and he can't rant and rave about him enough. Here's the other thing about Mudiay. There's a pride that he takes in his craft that's unique for a kid his age, and I think people forget this. He got hurt in China. He had a bad ankle sprain, and his reps brought him back to the U.S. to heal. When he got better, his Chinese team wasn't done with the season. Now, they had gone and signed Will Bynum in his place. He insisted, against his reps' advice, to fly back to China and to come off the bench for their last two playoff games because he wanted to help his team. That, to me, is indicative of a guy that's got some character. I think Mudiay, to me, is a prospect that everybody in this draft is sleeping on. And, listen, I could forgive Sam Hinkie for passing on him and taking D'Angelo Russell. But if either Hinkie or Phil Jackson passes on him to take Porzingis, they get what they – and I like Porzingis, don't get me wrong, but they get what they deserve. They're going to go down in history as having missed out on a really good player in this draft.
Wow, that's quite the vote of confidence. It's a great story on him going back to China. I'm thinking, though, Mudiay is a guy that's projected 5, 6, even 7 in some of these mock drafts from the experts, and you're saying he's John Wall. And I've heard he has a Russell Westbrook mentality between the years.
Yes, he does.
If you can get John Wall 2.0 at 5 in this draft, as it looks like you might be able to, how good is this draft?
It's very good, but I'll also say this. You always have the bias, the personnel executive bias, towards size. And that's what makes this draft interesting, is you just asked if my top five players, 3 of them are 6'11" or taller. So there's a premium on size in this draft, which means that, you know, you have two special guards, in my opinion, Russell and Mudiay. Which means that when you're sitting there in that 3, 4, 5 range, don't overthink it. You're getting a guy that you could get a guy that would have been 1 or 2 in many other years where there wasn't elite types of centers available. So, yes, it is a very good draft. But I'll also say one other thing about this draft on a whole. Once you get to 20 in this draft, your talent level drops off a lot, where in previous years you had an opportunity to really do something in the 20s and get yourself a nice player. It's going to be hard to do this year in this draft. I don't see a ton of guys down at that level that I think are going to be major rotation guys. And you look at them in prior years recently, and that hasn't been the case. You've been able to get decent players down there. It's going to be harder this year. I think you have a lot of good players in this draft. And after the good players run out, you hit that, 16, 17, 18, and it kind of just drops off and ends.
That's very sad to hear for all those teams looking for a defensive player of the year runner-up at pick 35 this year. In the lottery, you were talking about the incredible talent that is available and the size and the guys, and the talent is at the lower end of this draft. Which guy in the lottery has you most worried if you were an executive picking him? Which guy do you think is most likely to bust? And I hate to use that word. I don't want to throw that bad karma out there for anyone, but...
Well, listen. We gotta speak honestly and say what we feel. I had two guys I think have major bust potential. One is Stanley Johnson. He struggles shooting the ball. The thing about him, it's not just his perimeter shooting. He's had struggles finishing around the rim. He's a big, strong kid for his size, and he should be able to defend okay. But I just don't know that he projects at being a decent offensive player in the NBA. And I think what's going to happen to Stanley Johnson is if he ends up at 10 in Miami, which is where that's where I have him going, and a lot of people do, and it's certainly a significant possibility he ends up there. They're going to expect a lot out of him early. They're drafting him to come in and play immediately. And I don't know how good that's going to be for his development, and there's going to be a lot of pressure on him. So I didn't love what I saw during the season with Stanley Johnson. I'm not crazy for him. And the other one's going to surprise you. I am not a Kaminsky guy. I think that Kaminsky is not strong enough. I don't think he's quick enough. And I think his one skill that will translate is going to be his perimeter shooting. But otherwise, I worry tremendously about Kaminsky being all that productive. And I mean, a bench player, maybe as a pick-and-pop guy for somebody off the bench to give you short minutes in the middle, I think that's his future. I don't think he's an NBA starter. And I think whoever takes Kaminsky in the lottery with the thought that he could be that is going to be making a big mistake.
So with that said, I'm 100% with you on Stanley Johnson, by the way. I watched him in the tournament. I didn't see it offensively. He doesn't like to put the ball on the floor. Great athlete, might be a great defender. I just don't see him contributing a ton on offense. Who do you have taking him in your mock draft? And is there a
Stanley
team...
Johnson going 10 to the Heat. I'm sorry to interrupt. Finish the question. I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries. Going 10 to the Heat. And is there... If they're, both of us are cynical, is there a team where he would maybe be a best fit? What's his best fit?
That's a very good question. And I would think that if he goes to, I'll give you a place where if he ended up there, if he ended up at 17 in Milwaukee, that might not be a bad spot for him because Jason Kidd will live with guys who can run the floor and can defend but may not be able to shoot it all that well. Now, I don't know if he lasts that long. But that's a spot where I think he would probably fit okay. And we look at these other lottery spots. I'm not sure there's anyone because everybody in the lottery is going to need a guy to come in and contribute immediately. And I don't know that Stanley Johnson is ready to do that on the offensive end of the floor. I think going deeper in the draft would be better. Another spot that might not be bad for him, maybe Atlanta, where he could be in a wing rotation there. And although they need their wings to be able to shoot, he certainly could give them short snippets of minutes with Schroeder off the bench where they could put some defensive pressure on and try to push the basketball, a spot like that. But again, more of an established team that he can kind of be eased in somewhere. And not that the Heat aren't an established team, but the Heat are looking for this draft pick to be like a sixth man for them. They need to, whoever this draft pick is going to be a guy that they're going to count on to play 20 to 25 minutes a game. I just don't see Stanley Johnson being that.
Interesting. I can't disagree with anything you said there. So you might have already answered this earlier. You told me you're very high on Emmanuel Mudiay. He's projected, I think, at 5 universally right now. You would take him at 3. Who's your best value pick other than him? You said the top 20. Who's someone that you think is going to be a good value where they're picked?
I'm going to give you 3 guys. Okay. First one I'm going to give is Mario Hezonja. I have him going to Detroit at 8, and I think he's Stan Van Gundy's type of player. He's Drazen Petrovic with more size. He's got the guts of a burglar, this guy. He's arrogant. He rubs people the wrong way, but he can hit shots. He can jump through the roof. He's a hard-nosed physical defender. Zonia's a really good player. He's got to grow up a little bit attitude-wise, but it's the type of thing where if you get him in the right situation, you can dial him down a little bit. I think Zonia's going to be an excellent, excellent player on this level. Another guy I love is Bobby Portis. 6'11", 245, can step out and hit a jump shot. He's a good on-the-ball defender. Portis has one of those types of skills. Willie Cauley-Stein has it too. Towns has it to a lesser extent. A big guy that knows how to play pick and roll, and it has such value in today's NBA. Keep in mind, all those great players at Kentucky, Bobby Portis was the SEC Player of the Year. I think you get Bobby Portis in an NBA situation, he walks into your team immediately and becomes a rotation player. He's your first big off the bench and will start for you in no time. I actually think Portis, with his skill set, because he doesn't really have a lot of weaknesses, I think he develops a little bit of a post game, becomes a little bit of a better rim protector. And I think Bobby Portis actually has a chance to be a star player. I think he could be that good. And the third guy I really like, I think Tyus Jones, is if he gets in the right spot, it's going to be a very effective pro. He, even though he doesn't have the speed of Ty Lawson, the assist to turnover stuff, the smart shooting, that stuff all reminds me of Lawson. And I think it, with the Rockets at 18, if Tyus Jones is on the board, he's a wonderful player for them to go grab. So those are three guys, top 18 picks, I really think are going to be good values being selected where I haven't been selected.
Sweet. I asked for one, you gave me three. How can anyone complain? In this lottery, we've got a few teams, the Heat, the Pacers, the Thunder, who are not really used to seeing pick this low. I'm going to take the Thunder away from you because it's too easy. But of the remaining teams in the lottery, which team do you see making a playoff run next season?
It's a very interesting question. I'm probably going to, and it's fair to take the Thunder away from me. It certainly is. And I'm going to give you two. One is Utah, who finished the season very strong. And I think that they're going to have a very good start next year. Favors and Gobert together for a full season is going to be good. Watch Dante Exum. I think he'll raise his game here one season over the next, and he'll be the point guard that they're looking for. They'll get Alec Burks back from injury. Hayward's a comfortable player there. They got a lot of players, and you know, they do a nice job with this 12th. They can fortify a bench, and I do think Utah has elevated themselves to where they could grab a mid-tier free agent to help round out that bench and that team because they've showed enough. So I think Utah in the West, definitely, the lottery team that could get in. And I think that Stan Van Gundy's got a vision for the Pistons. And if they end up getting Hezonja, they brought in Ilyasova, is going to be a nice fit for them around Drummond. Stan's got all the confidence in the world in Reggie Jackson. We know Greg Monroe won't be back there. But between that and Caldwell Pope, he'll go out and get himself some people that could put the ball in the basket. So I think Detroit in a weakened Eastern Conference could be a team that makes a run for the playoffs this year.
I thought that last year, but I hope you're right this year. Those Detroit fans, they deserve it. And I think Sam.
Well, keep one thing in mind about last year, Josh. Okay, you started the season with that whole turd burger up front, with Monroe and Josh Smith having a share time, or Josh Smith playing a wing. That was never ever destined to work.
But they paid him. They paid Josh Smith and Brendan Jennings, but they thought it would work. And I mean, I know those weren't Stan's choices, but things are definitely coming.
Yeah, he inherited that mess, Stan.
That's what we take away from this season, and I guess that's the upside that you're preaching for next season.
Yep.
Who in the lottery, I guess let's look at the lower teams here, like the 1 through, say 7, who really can't afford to mess this one up? And I mean, whenever you have a top pick, you don't want to mess it up. Like you said earlier, someone will be the GOAT of this draft and look back and say, dang, we messed it up. But who can't afford to the most? Who needs a home run hit here the most?
The Knicks. The Knicks need it in the worst way, and I just don't know that they're going to get it because there's too many competing factions. The Knicks are a traveling soap opera. They probably finished in the lottery one pick below where they wanted to be with a guy that was a no-brainer for them. Personally, I think that if it's Moutier on the board, he's a no-brainer for him. But this goddamn triangle nonsense, okay? I mean, it's crazy. It really is. I mean, he's going to pass on. Take a less talented player because he fits this triangle system. And here's the thing. I mean, I've heard a lot of rumblings that, Jim Dolan and his consigliere, Isaiah Thomas, may not, if they don't like what Phil's about to do with the pick, Phil could end up getting a rug pulled out from under in the last minute here. And that's why they're a crazy soap opera. I will tell you, Phil's willingness to shop this pick and try to make a deal is indicative to me of, you're getting the whole, he doesn't like anybody, and, he's not in love with anybody. He's going to get a 4. You can get a lot of really good players at 4. I find that to be nonsense. I feel like Phil's looking to trade down because he has realized that he's going to have a lot of difficulty signing a free agent. that he's not going to be able to bring in any kind of significant free agent to turn this thing around. And his best bet to add a meaningful player is to leverage his draft pick into a player and a little bit of a lower pick of a guy that he would like, because it is a draft, as we said earlier, that goes 15, 18 deep. So, if you know, we've heard Sean Devaney of Sporting News had today that they've been in conversations with Phoenix about Bledsoe. I'm not sure that happens. It was not the first time we've heard it either. Chad Ford had it last week. We'll see what happens. But that's the type of thing Phil's looking to do. So for the Knicks here, it's, you know, they just, their luxury to make mistakes has ended. They have to be able to make this work. Jackson's regime has been a disaster since he took over 15 months ago. It's time for something, man. It's time for him to show why Jim Dolan's paying him $12 million a year. And if he screws this up, massive, massive changes are coming for the Knicks.
It's such a, the Knicks are such a puzzle. Carmelo's 31. He's coming off a major injury. You don't know what he's going to look like. You don't know who he can play with. Do you bring in a rookie? Do you bring in Bledsoe? There's a ton going on there. I agree with that. I believe they don't have their pick next year as well, which just further complicates things. What a mess. What a mess. Let's get you, get a couple more in here if we can before you get out of here.
Sure.
Most likely team to make a move. So if it's not the Knicks, who's it going to be?
It's a very good question. I will tell you that one team I think you could see do something in one direction or the other is Denver. Everybody's for sale in Denver. And as much as, you know, Mike Malone's coming in there to try to win now, they also don't love the core of guys they have. And I think part of it for Denver here is it's not that they don't love the players. They don't love the guys. It's very fresh in everybody's minds in Denver what these players did to Brian Shaw. And Brian Shaw didn't handle it well. Brian Shaw deserved to lose his job. But he also had a group of guys that grossly lacked professionalism in how they handled them. And I think that they want to break up this group a little bit. And I know that Lawson's a guy that they believe they can get a lot of value for because of his ability and his contract, and they probably can. He'll go. You know, I heard rumblings today about Wilson Chandler and the Clippers. If somebody will take Kenneth Faried, they would love to move and get out from under the 4 years and $50 million they have left for Kenneth Faried right now. Because when you look at how that locker room turned on Brian Shaw, Lawson and Faried were the ringleaders, and they'd like to eliminate them both. I mean, I think if somebody would give them something for Gallinari, they'd do it. And I think for Denver, they do realize that having the 7th pick, wanting to be active, that draft night's a very good spot for them there. So I do think the Knicks are probably going to be the most active, but if not the Knicks, watch it, Denver Nuggets.
Denver, another team in flux. Crazy. Carmelo Anthony, the last two teams, the only two teams he's played for, in flux. Not that I'm throwing any shade in that direction, but craziest rumor that you've heard about the draft. Last question, and we'll get you out of here.
Craziest rumor that I've heard about the draft. You know, it's, first of all, I cannot imagine on any planet that Sam Hinkie's taking Porzingis at 3. Because I'm locked in to some people in Philly where I know what's going on there. And I knew that when they traded Michael Carter-Williams, the primary reason that they traded Carter-Williams was with the belief that they really liked D'Angelo Russell and Emmanuel Mudiay. And I know the Embiid injury is an issue, but Nerlens Noel's still there. And they're not totally, you know, throwing in the towel on Embiid. To go ahead and take Porzingis would make absolutely no sense whatsoever to me. I mean, no sense at all. Here's the other insane rumor I heard, by the way. The Knicks and Kaminsky at 4. The Knicks are not taking Kaminsky at 4, okay? The Knicks worked out Kaminsky and they worked out Lyles, and they like both players. But the reason they worked out both players is not to take either of them at 4. The reason they worked out both players is because if they do get the deal like the Bledsoe deal done, whether at 13, both of those guys are on the radar screen at that spot. So that's the thing. But you've heard something yesterday where the Knicks are seriously looking at Kaminsky at 4. Even the Knicks are not that insane. So, yeah, those two, probably the Kaminsky thing, a little more nutty than the Porzingis thing. And one thing I'll tell you about the Porzingis thing with Philly is that if Sam Hinkie liked them that much, none of us would know about it, because Sam does a real good job of playing it close to the vest.
Like I said earlier, the teams are playing the games. The smoke screens are up. I really pray for the New York faithful that rumor is a terrible, terrible rumor. Brian, it was amazing to have you on the show. Thank you so much. I enjoy working for you. I enjoy doing this podcast. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Hey, Josh, my pleasure. Anytime. Let's do this again really soon. You're doing great work for the website. I'm thrilled to have you. I love your writing. I love the podcast. Just keep up all the great work, buddy, and we'll get back to this real soon. We got free agency coming maybe in a couple weeks. Let's revisit it and go. Once guys start signing and going places, we'll have a lot to talk about.
Beautiful. We'll collaborate then. Thanks again for coming on.
Sounds good. All right, buddy. My pleasure. Enjoy Andrew Bailey. Take care.
Will do. Out goes Brian. In comes Andy. Andy, are you with me?
I am here, Josh. How are you?
I am excellent. We are halfway through our draft preview on the Pull-Up Podcast. For everyone that just missed, I was just with Brian Geltzeiler. I'm now joined by Andrew Bailey. We are going to talk some NBA Finals. We're going to talk some draft. I already asked you how you are, but how are you doing with all the rumors here today? These crazy, crazy Boogie might be going to LA rumors.
Oh, man, it has been a wild day. The Boogie to LA one's probably my favorite, but as you know, I think we know that this is traditionally a week where a lot of rumors start flying, so perfect for a Monday on draft week.
Before we get into the draft, same thing I did with Brian for those who were listening the whole show. I just want to get your take. We just had the NBA Finals. We have the whole offseason ahead of us. Just your thoughts on the NBA Finals, whatever you want to tell the people.
Well, I think probably my biggest takeaway on the Finals is it was sort of the ultimate symbol of where the league is heading right now. A lot of teams have been trying to trend towards small ball and, you know, perimeter-oriented, shoot a lot of threes. You know, some teams like the Rockets base their entire offense around it. But we saw in the Finals done to a different degree with the Warriors going with Draymond Green at the center. Obviously, that was, you know, that was a big turning point in the series. To be able to win the NBA Finals starting lineup that, you know, your front court is 6'8", 6'7", with Harrison Barnes and Draymond Green, I think that's a huge takeaway. And now suddenly those types of players – and, you know, not to jump too far ahead, but those are the kind of guys that are getting a lot of buzz in draft talk now, is the same kind of combo forward. So, you know, that was probably the biggest takeaway for me, is just kind of what it said about the NBA in general and where it's headed.
Okay, I'm going to give you two fair fouls on the Finals. So, you know, I'll say something, you tell me if that's fair. If it's foul, give me your why not. Fair foul, Andre Iguodala winning Finals MVP ensured him a ticket to the Hall of Fame. Fair or foul?
Oh, man. I will say foul right now, but it certainly puts him more firmly on the track. He's still got, I want to say, at least 5 or 6 years, and he could, you know, he's probably not going to get back to the kind of player he was in Philly, just because he doesn't need to be a scorer. He doesn't need to carry an offense. But I think maybe 4 or 5 more years as sort of a linchpin chemistry, you know, defensive expert for the Warriors, I think could make that a fair assessment in a year or two. Just off the top of my head, I feel like it's maybe a little too early to say, you know, whether he's in for sure. But obviously, the Finals MVP win, especially over LeBron, it's certainly not something that's going to hurt his case.
Fair or foul, LeBron's play in this Finals outweighs his 2-4 record now in the Finals.
I say fair. You wouldn't have to argue too hard to convince me of the merit of the 4 Finals losses. But I think this one in particular, there's really no way to fault him. That he drug sort of a ragtag Motley Crue bunch further than they ever should have gone. That they were competitive in most of the series and that they won 2 games was an incredible accomplishment for that team. They had several guys playing over 30 minutes a night that are below average NBA players. Dellavedova at starting point guard, to be able to kind of to drag that along, that's incredible what he was able to accomplish. And he obviously averaged near a triple double. So I think, and the other thing about that too is there was talk of him winning Finals MVP, and a lot of people were mad that he won, even though, or that he lost, even though the Cavs lost as well. And that was even a possibility, and it was a legitimate one. That should say a lot too.
He did get four votes. I mean, I could have seen him winning it. I think now that he didn't win it, we know that no one's winning Finals MVP if you're on the losing squad. I think they kind of sealed it, but I agree with your synopsis on the whole thing there. When you look back 10 years from now at the 2015 NBA Finals, what sticks out? What do you remember?
I think kind of what I was saying earlier, and I think that we'll look at the 2015 NBA Finals as the moment when the whole league went kind of all in on this small ball, shooting threes and how important that is, and having four or five guys in your starting lineup who can handle the ball, who can pass, who can shoot. It's really sort of trending towards this positionless basketball. And, the NBA goes through phases, so, maybe 10 or 15 years from now it'll phase back to dominant post players or something like that. But I think this is a trend that's going to be here for a while, and I think a lot of people will be able to look back and say, when the Warriors went all in with small ball and defeated the best player in the world, that was a moment when it became real for a lot of people. So I think that's probably what I'll look back and take the biggest, that's my biggest takeaway.
Interesting. I think we've been heading there for almost, 10, 12 years. By the way, I think you and Brian would get along just fine. You had some similar takes there. Headed to the draft. I mean, we could talk finals for quite a while, but this is our draft preview, so we got to get there. And I know you're a Jazz guy, so we'll get some Jazz stuff going too. Give me your top five in the draft. I mean, there's a lot of projections. Everybody has everyone everywhere. Regardless of where you think they'll go, just your top five prospects in this draft.
My personal top five, I know everybody has Karl Anthony Towns one, and that's fine. I think he's going to be really, really good. And I think he does kind of fit the mold of what we were just talking about, big guys who can create, who can shoot. But I am actually higher on D'Angelo Russell than anybody else.
Wow.
And the reason he would be my number one is I look at players like Stephen Curry and James Harden, who were 1 and 2 in MVP voting this year, and I see how important and how going guard is in today's NBA. A player who can create himself with a dribble pull up, which is one of D'Angelo Russell's best skills already, is that dribble pull up. He's got a good change of pace game, kind of like James Harden. And he creates too, and that might be, that might be his best skill in the NBA. You watch film on him, and he sees passing lanes and angles, and he delivers these bounce passes. You just don't see from any other 18 or 19 year olds, and so I think that'll translate right away. So I think he's my number one, and I would go Towns two. Again, He's a big guy, but he's a lot of those skills that are, important in positionless basketball right now. So he can dribble, he can shoot a little bit, he can pass. What's important with him, too, is he can defend. That's what makes a guy like Draymond Green so valuable, because, he can do a little bit on both ends. Obviously, he does a lot on defense. Three, this one's maybe a little bit of a surprise, too, but I'm thinking Moutier. And it's for a lot of the similar reasons I said with Russell. I don't think he's as skilled as Russell, but I just think that combo guard position is so important right now. So he'd probably be my third. And then Jahlil Okafor, I think he's extremely talented, but I just don't know if he was born in the right era. That might sound crazy. But, in the mid-90s, he's a guaranteed number one pick probably. And then number five, I'd probably go with the toss-up for me between Justice Winslow or Stanley Johnson, two guys that can be kind of that combo forward, like a Draymond Green or a Kawhi Leonard. You know, I'm not coming out and saying that either of those guys will become that for sure. I just think they have that same sort of physical profile.
Interesting. Very interesting take, and I'm glad you went out on the limb there and put Russell at the top. You know, we got to spice it up a little bit. At the very least, you're either going to be very wrong or very right in 6 months, and I look forward to having a conversation at that time.
It's interesting you say that because I don't even remember where I heard it, but it was I think it was Kevin Pelton was talking about how he had some sort of statistical model who's basically projecting D'Angelo Russell is not only the most likely to hit, he's also the most likely to bust based on this model. So he's a very high and cold prospect. He could go either way. But I just think he's just perfect time to come into the NBA for his skill set and his size, and I'm really excited to see what he does.
I do love what you said about Okafor as well. I think I agree with that 100%. Okafor is a player when you played inside-out basketball that would have gone right away. And like you said, we might be drifting away from that for good
yeah.
in the league for a while.
Yeah, I think with him – go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think with him, you know, he's obviously extremely talented as a post player. But the comp that I see the most, and I think it makes sense, is Al Jefferson. Skill guy, can't really do much defensively. And it's just really hard to build a team around that player now. The Hornets tried, and we've seen where it got them. So I would be very wary of him in the top four or five, but I keep him there just because, you know, it is a rare skill set, and there's some value in maybe going against the grain. You know, as everybody else goes small, maybe you're the team that built around a big guy, and he can dominate some of those smaller teams in the future.
Interesting. That opens up a whole bay of questions for me. I'm going to stay on the draft, even though I'm really tempted to go elsewhere. You mentioned the model that had D'Angelo being either a bust or a hit. Who do you see in the lottery if you were an executive? Who would you want to stay away from? You just see them as a bust, don't think they're going to work out.
This is another one I've gotten a lot of flack for, and I'm starting to come around on him in the last couple of days, but I'm still really scared of Kristaps Porzingis. Incredible physical profile. I think Chad Ford just tweeted out within the last hour or so that he was 7'1¼ without shoes, 7'6 wingspan, longest in the draft. He looked great in that workout by himself, shooting threes and, you know, running for alley-oops against nobody. But every time I read stuff about him or I watch film, I just cannot help but think about guys like Bargnani and Yijin Lin and Nicholas Skidishvili. And I'm really scared when these guys who are supposed to be the next Dirk are hyped to this level, when so many of them, you know, haven't come through. I don't know if you know who Lane Bashrow is, but he does a lot of advanced stats, trying to project the way people, you know, will look in the NBA. And he shared with me a table almost identical Andrea Bargnani's statistics the year before he made the jump to the NBA. They're just like Porzingis. And then Matt Moore at CBS Sports just today posted a little excerpt from somebody's pre-draft profile on Yijin Lin, and it if you just replace the name with Porzingis, anybody would have bought it. It's the exact same verbiage, everything. So those guys, they scare me, and it's maybe because I'm not an overseas scout who gets to spend a lot of time watching them in person or anything like that. But I just feel like I have a better handle, and I feel like I can have a little bit more of a sure thing with somebody that I see here close.
Yeah, you know, I don't blame you for it. And I think that, honestly, I just tweeted out the other day, it's been the kiss of death for every European since Dirk was drafted to be the next Dirk. It just hasn't worked out for anyone. And Andrea Bargnani might actually be the best candidate of that group given to the All-Star game
yeah.
one time. I don't know.
He looked like he was heading in the right way for maybe a couple of years, but he always had the issues of mobility and defense. Could be something similar with Porzingis. Again, this is another one where I could be completely wrong, but it just scares me.
Yeah, I think you're warranted to feel how you feel. I don't know. Like you said, I'm not an overseas scout. I see what I've read and I see what I've seen on the YouTube tapes. So
yeah,
he's a relative unknown, and that I'm not ashamed to say. And I wish more people were just honest and that, you know, we're regurgitating what we've seen and heard, and we won't really know for a few months what he's going to look like.
Yeah,
maybe longer.
And I may be a little hypocritical on this, because Dante Exum was the same thing last year. He was a great physical profile, but there was really no way to know for sure. And he had even less to scout, because Porzingis has at least played professionally overseas. Exum just had high school experience, and I was pretty high on him. So, you know, it's hit or miss how you feel about draft prospects, and it's really kind of a shot in the dark every time, but. You know, this one particularly is a little worrisome.
Who on the other side of the spectrum, who's someone who's going to be a great value where they go, where the team picks them up and have no complaints, despite him maybe falling a little bit?
You know, there's a couple I would think about this one. I would possibly throw Stanley Johnson in there, just because I see him in a lot of mock drafts going outside the top 10. And he just has the perfect NBA body for what we were talking about earlier. 6'7", 240 pounds. I think at the combine he had 5 or 6% body fat. So he's just already, you know, elite NBA body, can defend probably 3, 4, maybe even 5 positions. I know that sounds crazy, but we saw Draymond Green defending centers in the finals. But though I think the one that will probably be the biggest value based on where he'll go is DeLon Wright, point guard out of Utah. A lot of guys who are 4-year college players, you know, they're instantly branded as too old to develop anymore. But I just think he's a really heady point guard. I think that he was a monster in steals and blocks. At the point guard position, two things that are kind of good indicators of what kind of NBA player someone will be. And he's probably going to go in the 20s. I think the highest he'll go is late teens, but he's probably going to go in the 20s. And I think a team's probably going to expect to get a backup point guard out of him, and I think he'll be a really good backup point guard. You know, and some teams will pay, you know, $3 or $4 million. For a backup point guard, and DeLon Wright on a rookie scale is going to be a little bit cheaper than that, and I think he'll be a good, solid pro.
I like the DeLon Wright. I think he's going to be a good player. Brandon Roy says stick it to everyone who is down on the seniors, but I'm against Stanley Johnson. I am not a Stanley Johnson guy at all, so that's interesting. But like you said, he's anywhere. I've seen him everywhere from 6 to 14. Brian was saying he thought his best fit was 17, even though he had him going 10. It would be interesting to see where he lands at the very least.
Well, what are your thoughts on Stanley Johnson?
Oh, I don't see him. What we were talking earlier about the three-point revolution, he's not a good shooter. He's not a very good offensive player. I didn't love his handle in the tournament. I know it's a small sample size. I don't think this is a guy that's really – I agree with you. He's a physical specimen. The guy's absolute phenomenal athlete, great player, can run the floor.
Yeah.
I think – I see maybe like Gerald Wallace at his
– Okay.
More of a Gerald Wallace build. But, you know, shooting is something that's coachable. So shooting isn't – you can't teach size. You can't teach strength the same way that you can teach shooting. So, you know. We'll have to wait and see on that as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's, you know, there is the school of thought that some people will just draft the physical profile and trust their coaching staff to be able to teach those things. But I think that's a roll of the dice in itself as well. So, I mean, I obviously understand.
Well, I think, like you said, there's people, it's coming down really to what exactly are you looking for in your player. And what do you think you can add to him? So if you want an athletic player who you're going to teach him the fundamentals or reteaching the fundamentals, and you take Stanley Johnson. If you want someone that can step in and play right now, maybe you take Devin Booker. You know, if you want someone to shoot,
he's another one I like, actually. Yeah.
But he does. He will never have the body Stanley Johnson does, but I think he's more equipped to play the NBA
for sure.
game than Stanley is. So
yeah, and
that's an interesting debate.
If you know what you're going to get out of Devin Booker, and you don't ask him to do too much, I really like him too.
We were talking a lot about who's going to take who and who are the best prospects, but there's been a lot of talk about, you know, teams moving, teams not really, despite a very talented draft, there's a lot of teams that are, you know, potentially dangling their picks, the Knicks, the Kings, the Nuggets. Who do you see is most likely to make a move in the draft?
Well, I think one of the reasons all those teams are dangling their picks is because it is kind of a deep draft. I think there's two or three guys at the top that I think are really good, and then maybe a couple in the next year after that. But then there's this huge group from like 7 to 20 that could just be really solid. So I think there's a lot of depth to maybe get some role players out of this draft. The team that if I had to pick one, and I, like we said, there's always a lot of misdirection and lies and smoke screens on draft week, but where we've seen the most smoke coming from seems to be New York. And I caught the end of Brian's segment talking about them possibly trading down to go after somebody like Lyles or Kaminsky. If they could somehow work it out where they got Eric Bledsoe, who I think may be better than any point guard in the draft, with the exception of maybe Russell. I think Eric Bledsoe is basically Moutier hits. So if you get that plus one of those really solid role players who can kind of be the new age stretch four or five, like a Kaminsky or Lyles, I think that's kind of a good starting point for a Knicks team that's obviously been borderline for the last couple years. So if I had to pick one from all the rumors I've seen today, I'd probably say the Knicks. But I wouldn't put anything past anybody. I feel like this could be a year where there's a lot of movement on draft night. So it'll be really exciting to watch.
I agree with everything you just said. I think the Knicks are in a spot where they need to hit a home run, whether it's in the draft, whether it's with a trade. I think this is – everyone says this every year or most years, but I do think this is a year where we're going to see a lot of movement in the draft. When you talk about the Knicks maybe getting Bledsoe and either Lyles or Kaminsky, I think that's a good package for number four. Do you think they play well in this – and as Brian said earlier, the triangle, are they triangle mold players? Do they fit in well with Carmelo Anthony, what they already have there?
Well, that's the – that's the question is, how long do they stick with the triangle? And I think when you look at the things that Phil Jackson says and Derek Fisher says, it basically, you have to think they're going to stick with it for the foreseeable future, despite every trend going in the opposite direction. I do think that Bledsoe fits it, though. When we look at the most successful triangle point guards in the past, it's usually a bigger point guard, somebody like Ron Harper with the Bulls and the Knicks. Derek Fisher wasn't really bigger, but he was kind of a physical point guard. So I do like Bledsoe's fit there. I don't necessarily love Melo in the triangle, the focal point. I think with Kobe and Michael Jordan, both were obviously scorers first, but at the prime of their careers, they could facilitate. Jordan has a couple seasons where he averaged 7 or 8 assists. Kobe has a couple seasons where he averaged 5, maybe 6. So they can facilitate from the focal point of the triangle. I don't see it as much with Carmelo. And then the other question is, who do they get to be the big guy to kind of anchor it? They're not getting a Shaquille O'Neal. to sort, or a Pau Gasol to be, you know, in the center. So, you know, is Greg Monroe that guy? I don't know. It's basically just trying to recreate something that Phil Jackson had 10 years ago and 20 years ago with pieces that make sense, like on paper or logically, but they're just, they're a tier below. So do they fit? Yes. Is it enough of a fit or good enough players to be, you know, title contenders? Probably not.
Fair enough. Fair enough. It's hard to match in any scenario where the Knicks become title contenders in the near future. But let's move on to the Jazz. We only got about 4 or 5
yeah.
minutes left. I know you cover the Jazz. I know that this is your area. Who would you like to see the Jazz take? Best case scenario.
I've been really high on Frank Kaminsky for them. I think he's perfect in that range, if he's still available at 12. The Jazz have already a, you know, top-level defense in place. After the All-Star break, they had the best defensive rating in the NBA, and it wasn't even close. They blew teams like the Grizzlies and the Warriors out of the water over that last couple months. What they really need now is some shooting to open up that offense. And they had a couple guys come around at the end of the year. Rodney Hood and Joe Ingles helped a lot. They both shot, I think, over 40% after the break. I know Ingles did. Hood was maybe 38. So Kaminsky, I think he's you know, the perfect fit for a third big. He doesn't project to be great defensively, but he'll probably spend most of his time on the floor with either Derek Favors or Rudy Gobert, who are both really good defensively, so they can kind of hide him a little bit in that regard. And then he's obviously, I mean, his number one skill coming into the NBA is going to be stretching the floor as a big man. So if he pulls, you know, some big defenders out of the paint, point line, suddenly there's more driving lanes for Gordon Hayward, Rodney Hood, some more diving lanes for Derek Favors. I think he's just the perfect complement for 15, 20 minutes a night. He would be a great change of pace for them.
Okay, sweet. You know, Frank Kaminsky, best case scenario, worst case scenario. Who would you just, your heart would melt if the Jazz took this guy? Andy, I still got you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
So sorry we didn't get that. Which player puts you into the fetal position if the Jazz draft him?
I think one I've heard a lot about from a lot of different people in the Jazz world is Trey Lyles, who I think does a lot of things well. But I think a lot of teams are going to try and put him in the mold of a stretch four, and I'm not sure he's that. He hasn't really done anything to suggest he's going to be able to become a good outside shooter in the NBA. He played out of position at Kentucky, so that, you know, that contributes to some of his lack of production there. But the shooting numbers scare me, and I just don't think he's really close to a master of any skill. He's decent at everything, but he's not great at anything. So he's one that I think is very much on Utah's radar. So, you know, I trust Quinn Snyder. He's a good player developer, but I feel like that one's is going to be a miss.
Fair enough. A lot of smart people, Brian Gelsiler, myself, I don't know, other people, think that the Jazz can make a run for the playoffs next postseason or next season. In your opinion, what's the number one thing that needs to come together for the Jazz if they are going to make a run to the playoffs next year?
Well, I think number one, they got to hope for at least a small leap from Dante Exum. After the All-Star break, they played at a 50-plus win pace. So that, you know, that was good, and that would, if over a whole season, would probably be good enough to get in even in the brutal West. But it's going to be tough to get that for a full season if Exum is as bad as he was offensively last season, and he was historically bad. They survived because he's an excellent defender, which is kind of the opposite of how he was projected to start out his career. In today's NBA, with how important point guard play is, and we talked earlier about how important the point guard and the combo guard is, he's got to start to give them something offensively for them to be able to compete in the brutal Western Conference.
Fair enough. Thank you so much for coming on today, Andy. Appreciate all the insight. I'd love to have you on again, perhaps when the Jazz makes some moves in free agency and the draft goes down.
Absolutely. Hear your thoughts. Fun, yeah.
Thank you very much for coming
on.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Catch us every Monday, 9 p.m. my time, Mountain Time, 11 p.m. Eastern for most of you. Thank you very much. Have a great night.